Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, Carlos, I'm freezing to death up here in Ohio. Winter weather finally hit. What happened to El Nino, anyhow? Where'd that go?
Hey, he's in Spain.
Yeah, he's in Spain. Jordan Spieth began 2016 right where he left off 2015. The European Tour has identified yet another young star. Plus, foremost golf expert Jeff Shackelford stops by to talk about what he's following in 2016. So let's go, Carlos.
Let's go. We have a very good show for you in store. Hey, and let's start right away with the weekend backspin where we recap the weekend's action. We're going to start with the PGA Tour and the Hyundai Tournaments of Champions, where Jordan Spieth, like you mentioned, he finished the event at 30 under par, just one shy of the record set at Kapalua by Ernie Els back in 2003. He picked up his seventh PGA Tour win and began 2016 in the perfect fashion. You know, that's the Tournament of Champions. And he said, hey, I'm the champion of champions, so he wanted. He began that final round six clear of Patrick Reed, but his advantage was picked back to three when Reed birdied that ninth hole. Spieth, though, showed no signs of faltering through, and he made birdies at the ninth and tenth holes to restore a comfortable cushion. When Reed bogeyed the 15th, his race was run. Brooks Koepka was Spieth's closest challenger at the start of play on Sunday, five back, but he started poorly and couldn't recover at the end of the week in a tie for third with Grant Snedeker. Some talking points from this tournament, I would say, first of all, there was seemingly unstoppable Jordan Spieth's seventh PGA Tour victory. Just his 77th star, he has solidified his position as the world's number one golfer ahead of Jason Day, who could have overtaken him with a win there at Kapalua. Spieth has now tied Tiger Woods in securing seven PGA Tour victories by the age of 23. However, it has to be mentioned, Woods had won 18 tournaments by the time that he played 77 events on the circuit. But Spieth was quick to say when he was talked about that, and I quote, "It's a bit premature for comparisons. It would be hard to believe I could compete with him through the entire course of a career, but I'm going to try," end of quote. So, hey, there it is, the challenge. Another one is that Patrick Reed, he came very near to completing a flawless week. He was bogey-free until that 15th hole in the final round where he made a 6 on the par 5. Although he couldn't match speed scoring, he was happy with his week. Paddy Harrington had a good week. Paddy played four steady rounds and closed with a 67 to end the week in a tie for 6th place with Fabian Gomez and Peter Marnatti. Such was the prize money in this limited full field event. He picked up over $200,000 for his efforts, and that's a nice start for the year. Finally, Jason Day couldn't produce his best form to facilitate the anticipated battle with Jordan Spieth, but his final round of 65 displayed promise, although tinged a little bit by rustiness owing to him having taken a lengthy break. Day was en route to a super low score on Sunday, but failed to birdie either the closing pars 5 or take advantage on the 16 when he had a wedge in his hand for the approach red.
Yeah, did you see how close Spieth came to knocking in that albatross on Saturday at 18? That thing was perfect. He hit that 3-iron up there, 2-iron, whatever that thing was, and landed it short and let it roll up there, went right by the edge of the hole, tapped it in for a little ho-hum eagle. Day was just a little rusty. You could see he hadn't played for a couple months. But he played pretty good for being rusty, but... And then Harrington, he had that surgery and has been doing that chirogenics or whatever that is, where he sits in that 140 degree below zero stuff or whatever, so he heals faster. Evidently it works. He played pretty good. Hey, Brandon Stone, the European Tour has identified another talented young golfer. 22-year-old Brandon Stone from South Africa won on home soil at the BMW South African Open. It was his first European Tour victory in 27 European Tour starts. Stone moves inside the top 120 in the world from number 249. Young guy, hasn't played much, big deal for him. His previous best finish, a T7, came at the 2015 Madeira Island Open last year, and he earned his biggest European Tour check this week, 158,000 euro, and gains a European Tour exemption until the end of 2017. Stone posted his 14-under par score several holes before the rest of the field, but none of the 54-hole leaders could match that number. Big win for him. European Tour finishes out South African swing this week as it moves to Johannesburg for the Joburg Open before heading to Malaysia and then the Middle East, Carlos.
And that wraps up our week in backswing. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And we're going to start the TV shot. It's with Fred, and you're going to be starting to talk about the strong year that Golf Channel had in 2015.
Yeah, the numbers for golf are growing on across television, actually. Golf Channel had some of the best numbers they've seen since the network hit the airwaves in 1995. Plus, the numbers just in for the Hyundai Tournament of Champions from Hawaii saw the best overnight ratings in 10 years. The final round overnight rating of .70 is Golf Channel's highest overnight rating ever at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions, and it was more than double the overnight rating from last year. You know, and this had some pretty good competition, too, because you had Sunday's late NFC wildcard game, and it was also opposite the Golden Globes. So, you know, that's pretty good stuff. Every round saw significant increases over past Hyundai Tournament of Champions for the past several years. In addition, NBC's coverage of round three was the highest overnight rating for any telecast from this event in the last 10 years. Who needs Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson? The youth movement's exploits in the majors and at the tail end of 2015, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, are bringing a new and younger audience to the game. In the first quarter of this year, Golf Channel's viewership was down 14%, but it steadily increased each quarter thereafter. Jordan Spieth's possible Grand Slam, his performance at the Open Championship, Spieth and Day both at the top of the PGA Championship leaderboard, evidently grabbed some young viewers. Throw in Spieth capturing the $10 million FedEx Cup, and with a competitive President's Cup with both Spieth and Day involved, the fourth quarter rating grew by 13%. That's an increase, Carlos, 13%. That's a very good number, plus a very good sign that more than just hardcore golf fans are tuning in to watch these young guys bring it. Millennials, we all talk about millennials and Gen Xers and all that. The guys ages 25 to 34, the viewership on Golf Channel in that age group increased by 50% in total day viewership, 17% in primetime, and 22% for a PGA Tour event. These numbers are huge. To get that age group to take an interest in golf on TV will relate to millions in green fees, country club memberships, and golf equipment sales. I can see the golf club manufacturers salivating right now. Let's not forget the people who have money to spend and actually buy Cadillacs, Lexuses, and BMWs that the Golf Channel and the PGA Tour need to sponsor their event. Contrary to popular belief, Carlos, the Symphony and the Opera on PBS does not win the Most Affluent Audience Award. In 2015, golf registered the most affluent audience in all of television. Golf Channel was the most affluent watched all day with an average household income of $77,000 in prime time, and again wins with an average of $83,000. Carlos, this is great news indeed for the golf industry. If they watch it, they will come to the golf course and the pro shop to spend some money. Spieth and the young guys are drawing the attention of younger Americans that have not been golf fans before. Like Tiger Woods 20 years ago, Spieth and company are getting them to come.
I really hope that translates, you know, into that. More people coming to the tournaments and starting to play, because really golf is in really dire need of that. But hey, good news, definitely. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Rory McIlroy. If anything he learned from his previous engagement to Caroline Wozniacki is that a low-key engagement to Erica Stoll can aid in his quest to return to the world number one. He talked about it on a recent visit to Facebook's headquarters in Dublin in Ireland and said that Erica Stoll has a calming presence and is giving him great balance to his life and seems sure the wedding bells will not distract him. One obvious reason for that is that the nuptials are not impending, a good job really, as this season promises to be the most action-packed on record with the Ryder Cup and golf returns to the Olympics in Rio to fit in, and Rory has both very well in his sights. And since we're speaking of his sights on a better season, sights set on this, on the 2015-16 season for him, he posted a photo on Instagram last month showing that he had laser eye surgery. The caption read, human version of the dreaded K9 cone, only for sleeping though, laser eye surgery went well yesterday. Well, according to the Mayo Clinic, it typically takes 2 to 3 months to fully recover from LASIK eye surgery, but some regain clear vision much faster. McIlroy is scheduled to play very soon in the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship on January 21 to the 24th, along with Jordan Spieth, Henrik Stenson, and Ricky Fowler. Tiger Woods, as you might remember, he had LASIK surgery in October 1999 and won the Disney Classic in his first start since surgery later that month. He had a follow-up procedure in April 2007 and again won in his next start, the Wachovia Championship in May 2007. So that bodes well for Rory McIlroy. And he will be making multiple other starts there in the Middle East before coming to the United States to play the Northern Trust Open in February. Riviera, where the tournament is played, is a classic course. He has never played it before. And he went on to note that some of his slow starts at the Masters might have been because he didn't have enough golf under his belt going into the first major of the year. Fred, health permitting, that won't be the case this year.
Yeah, I think that's really great. I'm really happy that he's doing that. I think that's a really good deal. I know it's good for the PGA Tour. It's good for the that tournament, the Northern Trust at Riviera in L.A. That's good stuff. And laser eye surgery, you know, I had to have some cataract surgery here early in 2015, actually. And I'm telling you what, it's the best thing in the world. Anybody that's worried about doing that or concerned about it, don't be. Go see your guy and get it done, because that is good stuff. Hey, it's really nice to see, Carlos, that Donald Trump can still take a little time out of his busy schedule running for the Republican nomination for president to publicly spat with a couple of folks. We have to add this report just for Kieran. You know that, right? First, in response to the UK Parliament threatening to ban Trump from entering the country, Trump said, the Trump Organization has plans to invest more than £200 million into the development of the iconic Trump Turnberry Resort located in South Ayrshire, Scotland. Our work there has been widely supported by the local community and created hundreds of jobs for the region. Over the coming years, we intend to further develop Trump Turnberry and invest millions more at the site, creating a sustained economic growth for South Ayrshire and Scotland. Additionally, we have plans to invest £500 million towards further development at the 1,400-acre Trump International Golf Links in Aberdeen, which has been consistently rated the best modern golf course in Great Britain and Ireland by the prestigious Golf Week magazine. Any action to restrict travel would force the Trump Organization to immediately end these and all future investments. We are currently contemplating in the United Kingdom. I'm thinking that maybe Scotland, as well as our cohort, Kieran Clark, would would declare a national holiday if Trump were not allowed back to the old sod. Secondly, Trump and actor Samuel Jackson have been engaging in a Twitter feud. Trump took a shot at Samuel Jackson last week after the actor suggested that Trump cheated at golf. Can you believe that? Nobody, I can't believe that. Trump took to Twitter to suggest that Jackson did too many TV commercials. This from a guy who had a reality TV show. And that he was not a fan of Jackson. This was apparently in response to a recent interview in which Jackson complained that one of Trump's golf clubs had charged him without his knowledge. I've golfed with him. He's referring to Trump, Jackson told the magazine. I actually got a bill from Trump National Golf Club, and I haven't been there in 4 or 5 years. So I had my assistant call. They never call themselves. You know, they just have the assistant call. They said it was for membership dues, and I said, well, I'm not a member. And they said, yeah, you are. You've got a member number. Apparently, Trump made Jackson a member, and he didn't even know it. I guess he figured anybody that makes like $200 million a year, like Samuel Jackson, Trump wants a part of it, I guess. Maybe that's a tax. That's one of his new taxes. Jackson also said Trump was an interesting character, more like P.T. Barnum than a politician. The magazine finished by asking Jackson whether he was a better golfer than Trump. Jackson answered, smiling, I am for sure, and I don't cheat. Trump countered the interview to the best of his knowledge. He had never played golf with the actor. The bottom line on all this is, in a sign of the times, Jackson unfollowed Dear Donald on Twitter. What did we do before we had Twitter to amuse us, Collars?
He unfollowed him? Oh, no, that's a cardinal.
Oh, that's terrible.
No way. Hey, Fred, Luke Donald. He has admitted that he considered quitting golf after enduring a difficult couple of years. After a Masters last April, the former world number one dropped out of the top 50 in just 7 months before he had failed to make Paul McGinley's 2014 Ryder Cup team. Donald, who hasn't won on the PGA Tour or the European Tour since 2012, conceded that his struggles led him to seriously considering leaving the game. He told the Daily Telegraph, and I quote, my confidence had taken a big knock, and I asked myself if I wanted to continue doing this. But then I told myself to not be a baby, to grow up and realize how lucky I was. I was still playing golf for a living, end of quote. The Hernal Hempstead-born player finished T5 at the British Masters last year and T7 at the Scottish Open, as well as recording 2 top 10 finishes on the PGA Tour. He was also forced to qualify for the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay and the Open at St. Andrews. He went to a respected psychologist, Michael Gervais, in a bid to reclaim his mental strength, and he said about that, quote, he just reminded me that it's up to me what mood or mindset I'm in. When you're in a slump, it's easy to forget you're still the one who's in control, end of quote. You know, a change of caddy added to that uncertainty last year when his longtime backman, John McLaren, joined Paul Casey. Donald is currently 78 in the world rankings, sandwiched in between the American Brendan Steele and fellow Englishman Tommy Fleetwood, respectively, and it seems like ages ago when he was number one and playing and winning everywhere. I mean, so consistent. So, Fred, he will need a very solid start to the year if he's to find his way back into the top 50 in time for the Masters and regain that consistency that he had before and make this year's Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, Carlos, I think that's just a case of a guy who you know, went through a stretch for 3 or 4 years there where really played really well. He's not the longest guy, but he kept it in the fairway enough and just phenomenal talent around the greens. And he got to winning, and it just bred more winning. And, you know, he just had a couple really good years back there. And then when he found that success, he just quit working as hard and lost the edge. You know, he's got more money than he's ever going to spend. You know, he's set for life, and you know, I think you just lose that edge, that desire to really get out there and practice. You know, you just that last half hour or whatever, you pack it in. Let's go have a beer or something, you know. So, hey, Carlos, the old Crosby Clam Bank, the AT&T Pebble Beach, is turning into a buddy's trip after all, just like old Binger wished. A lot of big names going to be heading to Pebble Beach this year for the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. Actor and producer Mark Wahlberg signed up to play at Pebble. which prompted his good buddy, Bubba Watson, to play an event for the first time since 2007. Boy, there's a pair. Can you imagine Mark Wahlberg and Bubba Watson together? What? That is amazing to me. I would buy a ticket just to watch that, actually. After American League MVP Josh Donaldson signed up, fellow Alabaman from Auburn, Jason Duffner, hopped on board. Even part-time professional golfer Steve Stricker will make his first appearance in 10 years at Pebble because he wants to play with his good buddy, country singer Toby Keith. All we need is Willie Nelson. That'd be a hoot. Maybe Willie could caddy for him. The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am annually draws over 150,000 spectators and is contested on three of Monterey Peninsula's premier golf courses, Pebble Beach, of course, Spyglass Hill, and Peninsula Country Club. It will offer 156 pros a complete 156 pros will compete alongside 156 amateurs for the $7 million purse. It's hosted on one of the most beautiful stretches of ground on earth, the Monterey Peninsula. It's all about the charity, and the Monterey Peninsula Foundation, which hosts the AT&T National Pro-Am, awarded $9.1 million to nonprofits providing a host of services in their communities. Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Patrick Reed, David Duval, Paul Dunn from the Open, the young guy that played so well at the Open last year, Padraig Harrington, Dustin Johnson, and Phil Mickelson are just a few of the more familiar names that will join Bubba, Duff, and Strix to make this one of the best fields Pebble Beach has seen since Phil blitzed Tiger in 2012 to collect his fourth win at the tournament. Bing Crosby started this tournament in 1937 for a few of his friends in the entertainment business to be paired with a professional golfer. It was sort of a buddy's trip on steroids. Some great stories have emanated from this tournament over the years, with none better than the match instigated by some wagers made by Francis Wee Metz's old caddy businessman Eddie Lowry, pitting the two best amateurs of the day, Harvey Ward and Ken Venturi, against an aging Byron Nelson and Ben Hogan at Cypress Point in 1956. The details of that famous match can be read in Mark Frost's great book, The Match, The Day the Game of Golf Changed Forever. Corporate dollars were needed to keep the tournament afloat, and Bing's name was removed completely from the name of the tournament in 1985, but his spirit still lives along Carmel Bay. Celebrities, top name pro golfers, and Pebble Beach, what's not to love? Once the tour leaves Hawaii, they will head to Palm Springs for the Career Builder Challenge, slide over to Torrey Pines, move inland to Phoenix for the waste management, and then move north to Pebble in the second week of February. Can't wait, Carlos. Pebble Beach and a strong field. Let's go. Let's do it.
That wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. For Woo, Fred has some words from our sponsor.
Hey, United Golf Network wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. Picture yourself standing behind the counter of your own pro shop. That's available through United Golf Network. Without paying rent, without having a big bunch of money tied up in inventory. You can be selling brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories available to be sold. Log on to UnitedGolfNetwork.com. Check out the opportunity. See if it fits for you. It's a good deal, Carlos.
And, like I said, that wraps up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we're going to have our very important guest of the week. Our VIG is Jeff Shackelford. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're are back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Jeff Chacko. For you know him for being a contributing writer to Golf World and Golf Digest and Golf Channel Morning Drive every Monday. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about Jeff's interview.
Yeah, he writes one of the most informative websites for golf on the Internet. You can also see him on Golf Channel's Morning Drive, and he's very involved in the history of the game and golf course design. He talked a little bit about some storylines to follow for 2016. He's going to talk a little bit about Jordan Spieth, of course, the Olympics Ryder Cup. And we kind of wrap up talking about the LPGA and Lydia Ko. So why don't you go ahead and run that, Carlos?
Let's play it.
Jeff Shackelford has joined us today. He's the creator of JeffShackelford.com, one of the most widely read golf information sites on the web. He's also a golf course design aficionado and a regular contributor to Golf Channel's Morning Drive. We're extremely happy to he stopped by for a return visit to the Backline Report. Welcome back to the show, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, Fred. Good to be back.
The big story in golf this week, just like last year, is Jordan Spieth. We just saw him collect his seventh PGA Tour win at the age of 22 and become only the second player to ever reach 30 under par in a 72-hole tournament. Does this surprise you a little bit that he's able to sustain his high-level play and start 2016 right where he left off last year?
Probably in the sense that he said it was his best putting week he's had yet, and he's had some really good putting weeks. So to kind of come off of a layoff, and it wasn't a long layoff, but still, he didn't, by his accounts, didn't play a lot. He practiced a fair amount on his simulator at home and things like that. So to come out on a golf course like that where so much touch is required and really only have 1 3-putt, and that was on a par 5 he reached in 2, that's mighty impressive. But at the same time, he's really shown that he's going to be a consistent player. You don't really sense he's going to be more like Ricky Fowler, who's very up and down. He's just shown he's going to be there every time he tees it up. And so in that sense, it really isn't a shock.
Yeah, with the Tiger kind of slipped out of the picture here over the last couple of years, of course, the comparisons start popping up. You know,
yeah.
What he's done at a young age to Tiger. I know you had some data and some numbers on your website. What's your take on all that?
Well, it's funny. It makes some people very upset that how could you be making these comparisons? Well, he's won 7 times before the age of 23 at 22. Tiger won 7 times, and then somebody says, well, Tiger did it. Had 18 wins, though, in 77 starts, and Jordan has 7 wins and 77 starts, so you shouldn't even be bringing it up whatsoever. It's like, ay, 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 come on now, let's calm down. I love it because it highlights what Tiger did, and I think if I could care less if the comparison's legit or not. The fact that it gets us, because we have such short attention spans these days, and if it gets people realizing and appreciating what Tiger did, or if Jack Nicklaus's name comes up, or whoever, I love golf history. So anything that reminds people that there were people who played this game very well prior to the year 2000, I think it's a positive thing. And that said, I think the comparisons to Tiger are not far-fetched, for the very simple reason that he's showing now, he's starting to get that aura around him that when he gets a lead, he's not going to lose it. And that's what Tiger had going for him. And when you see his quotes from his peers suggesting that they kind of know it's over when he's got a 5-shot lead, that's Tiger-like.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, another thing that popped up to me this week, you know, Tiger and Phil, you know, they couldn't be bothered to go play in the Tournament Champions. It's way too far to fly across the ocean over there to Hawaii and play in that thing. And here you've got Jordan Spieth, who embraces it, Jason Day, and some of these other young guys that, you know, hey, Hawaii, this is fun. Let's go play in this thing. You know, we're going to get paid whether we make the cut or not. You know, it's a good deal. You know, I've always badmouthed the PGA Tour for starting, and it seemed like starting the year with a, you know, like nothing. Nothing happens before the Masters, it seems like. So I kind of like this. I kind of look forward to it.
Well, the vision to me has always been proper and correct that the tour had. It's just the vision wasn't shared by certain players, and I understand they have a lot asked of them, and they want to pace themselves, and people like Phil Mickelson know that their game works a certain way and on certain kinds of golf courses. And Jason Day probably wasn't even ready to be playing last week, but gosh, a week in Maui, it's relaxed, you get easy world ranking points. I'm getting a little tired of hearing how great these young guys are, because I worry that it'll wear people out. But gosh, how can you not be excited that they had the common sense and wisdom to say, hey, you know, that's a nice week to go to Maui and hang out, and I'll pick up some points, some easy money, stay at Kapalua, at a Ritz-Carlton, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it makes you feel good that they're a little more grounded that way, and that they sat there on the sidelines, said, hey, when I win, I want to go to Kapalua. That gives you a sense that they're a little more in touch with reality.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's talk just a little bit about some more stories that are going to be watching here in 2016. Of course, the Olympics is coming up later this year. I know you've been following that very closely. It's really playing havoc with the tour schedule this year on both the PGA and the LPGA. Is everything ready in Rio? You know, can this really help build world golf around the globe?
Yeah, I think the whole thing will end up being a positive. You're already seeing players get more excited. I think that was the big concern, was that the players were not really expressing kind of the excitement you thought they would. But now that they see the promos running on NBC with the Olympic theme music, and kind of realizing that the whole world stops to watch this and they could be a part of that, they're starting to get pretty excited, Adam Scott maybe being the only one who's not. So I think from that point of view, that was my biggest concern going into the whole thing, and that's now not going to be the case. There's still going to be lots of griping and criticism of the schedule, which really is unfortunate and will be kind of a mess there at that time. And there will be questions about Rio in general. I think the course will be fine. We'll know more soon, but I know Gil Hance, the architect, very well, and he's going again next week, but he was really pleased with everything he's seeing. I mean, the kind of things they're talking about now are real nice, fine detail things to kind of get squared away. Nothing like big picture stuff. Will there be grass on the greens and all that? So that's kind of a worry that nobody needs to have. And the course will look cool, and it'll probably be the iconic venue of the games, Fred. They really haven't built that many thrilling architectural things, and this is going to look really cool based on kind of the blimp shots and where it sits and how the design's presented. But, the, you know, and then the format will be kind of poo-pooed. It's amazing how many people, they still don't know. I sat next to somebody at a basketball game the other night who's a golf fan. They didn't even know golf was still in the Olympics. So there's that to overcome. And then when they hear the format that it's kind of another stroke play event, people go, oh, really? You know, and so in spite of all those little things that will go wrong, I think it'll be a good thing. And then in 2020, the schedule will hopefully be better, and the PGA Championship won't be near the Olympics, and that'll be a big, big boost for the games in Tokyo.
I know it's early in the year, but 2016 is a Ryder Cup year. It's going to be held up at Hazeltine Country Club up near Minneapolis. We're looking like some young guys are going to be making the team, and you know, we talked about young guys before, but I mean that storyline just keeps coming through everything. You know, we've got Spieth, we got Patrick Reed, we got Ricky leading the way. We got Justin Thomas making the comment that he'd rather win the Ryder Cup than a majors. You know, we could see a little different vibe later in the year at the Ryder Cup.
Absolutely, and we saw at the last Ryder Cup that the young guys were the were not burdened by some of the stuff in the past that's gone on, and whether it's team politics or just a mindset of and memories of past Ryder Cups that Spieth and Reed went out, and even Jimmy Walker, they were, it was like they had a clean slate and they weren't burdened by the stuff that's gone on in the past. So I think it's all positive for the Ryder Cup, for the U.S. team. You know, we used to think, oh, you got to have experience, but, you know, now there's so much pressure that maybe it's better that you kind of have young nerves and young guys who are not maybe not aware of just how much pressure that people have been putting on themselves in the Ryder Cup. So I'm excited about that. and it will be after a break of of golf, so that's good. The playoffs will be in between the Olympics and that, but I don't know how many people will care about those this year. I think they're going to be pretty lightly watched after a busy summer.
Yeah, who can get excited about somebody winning $10 million? You know, once it's been done four or five times, you know.
It's kind of, yeah. And again, another one where the format is just, I think if the format were a little bit different, if it were a true playoff, at some point in the competition where you really felt like it was kind of a do or die moment and there isn't some algorithm there, people would, I think they'd be more invested in it, but I don't know. It's a tough time of year when everybody's excited about the start of football again.
Hey, before we get away from Ryder Cup, the Euro team's looking a little different, too.
Yeah.
They may have their own youth movement. You know, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Luke Donald, they're kind of iffy, maybe. They're going to have to get some things done this year if they want to be around for that.
Yeah, but they have some. There's some promising young players over there. Somebody like a Danny Willett, who isn't very well known to Americans, is a great, great player. There's some real talent over there, too, in Europe, and I'm not too worried about them. It may be a team that a lot of people look at and go, who are these people? I think that they're ready for a changing of the guard in a sense, too. And but I won't be shocked if some of their veterans, Luke Donald or Lee Westwood or Poulter or McDowell, kind of rally this year and make the team, because there is something about the Ryder Cup to them that is just so different to – maybe it's kind of equivalent to our younger guys in the way they're viewing the Ryder Cup, but boy, it transforms them as golfers. They just they don't seem burdened by the pressure of whether they're going to make the team or not. It seems to rejuvenate their careers. So and good for them, but it just certainly doesn't have that effect on a certain generation of American players.
Before I let you get away today, I want to talk about one more subject, the women's golf, LPGA Tour. We follow it very closely here on Backline Report, and Lydia Ko has just pretty much dominated the storyline there the last couple of years. Do we see that continuing? Indy Park is right there. Stacey Lewis is right there. Lexi Thompson seems to be gaining the consistency that she needs to compete at the top level. Any comments on the ladies' tour?
Well, the thing I'm most fascinated to watch with Lydia is that she's a tinkerer. I sense from David Ledbetter's comments that she's a smart tinkerer, but he's definitely got somebody there who trying to get better and constantly, which is what makes her great. But as we know, having watched, and Fred, you've seen enough players to know that it's a dangerous game. Constantly try to get better without getting into trouble, getting into bad habits, or just biting off more than you can chew. And so I think that's going to be the fun with her, is to see, because she's going to get better, but does she kind of know when to just say, okay, enough is enough. Now I just need to let age and experience kind of continue to be part of how I get better. I think the sky's the limit for her. And I think the other element to her rise that's interesting to watch is so many people say, well, why aren't people paying attention, more attention to Lydia Ko? And I just keep saying, you know what, let her just keep doing her thing, and sports fans will gravitate to her. It may just take longer than people realize, but that's the nature of golf. We're a little bit more off the radar than other sports. So just let Lydia be Lydia, and let all those other great players you mentioned keep doing what they're doing, and we'll see if hopefully some good rivalries develop. I guess the only one that kind of bums me out is NB is now, essentially a Hall of Famer. And I don't think she got enough credit for the year she had last year.
Yeah.
It was a pretty unbelievable year. I actually voted for her on in the Golf Writers Awards, because I just tend to go with multiple majors as my ultimate barometer for a great year. And I was on the minority end of that vote.
We talked so much about Jordan Spieth's year a couple years ago, coming from no tour status to winning and ending up being on the President's Cup team. And Brooke Henderson basically did the same thing in the LPGA.
Yeah.
Started with no status, couldn't, you know, Juan wouldn't give her an exemption.
Right.
She ends up winning on the, you know, top five in the majors, winning on the Sumatra Tour, winning on the LPGA, earning her card. And you heard very little about it.
No, and she's She's another amazing, exciting talent, and they certainly have no shortage of them. And I think maybe this is a year it'll kind of crystallize as to who those players are. Does Lexi kind of keep doing her thing, or does she level off somehow? Michelle Wee kind of now is a veteran, and can she make a comeback? You know, that's kind of the fun stuff to see. But there's just so much competition too, Fred, in the kind of the sports world and for attention. And so even in golf, there's a lot of competition. You know, the European Tour and the PGA Tour and all the stuff that's going on, and Donald Trump and this and that and the news cycle. That sometimes it's difficult to get noticed. And you know, Mike Wan and the LPGA Tour they have an amazing communication staff, so they, I think, have a good sense of where to kind of pick their battles and how to get the word out on their players. And but it's frustrating because I think you, what I sense from you is what I've always sensed when I go to a tournament is the women are just such great athletes. They're so down to earth, marketable, interesting people. They're a little more worldly in a lot of ways than the men, in terms of kind of how they live life and approach their life as a traveling golfer, and it's fun to follow them. And so the more we can kind of introduce people to that, I think the more they'll engage with them.
We've been talking with Jeff Shackelford from jeffshackelford.com, one of the best sources of golf information on the web. Also spends time on Morning Drive on the Golf Channel. You can see him here and there. Jeff, thank you so much for talking to us again today, and we look forward to having you on again.
All right. Thank you, Fred.
There you have it. That was an interview for our VIG, Jeff Shackelford. And, Fred, you talked about everything there but the kitchen sink, and Jeff is so knowledgeable, so such a great writer about everything. And especially I liked what he said about Inbay Park. You know, he voted for her, and it's interesting because it was almost a toss-up there, because she had such a great year and winning multiple majors, and still it was Lydia Ko who got all the accolades.
Yeah, Indy had her majors, but, you know, they both had five wins, and then Lydia won the million-dollar bonus in 2014. She backs it up, wins it again in 2015. That kind of trumps, and then she won her own major also at the Evian. So Lydia is the top of the pile right now, but Indy is right there. And then, you know, Stacy had kind of a frustrating year. She was right there so many times. She had met several runners up, you know, that she could have won, but just for whatever reason couldn't get over the hump. And then you've got Lexi Thompson, who is just knocking on the door. She's becoming much more consistent with her length. If she can just putt a little bit, she's going to be hard to beat. And then, you know, I think you mentioned Michelle Wee in there. You know, if she can be injury-free and get back to the form that we saw from her in 2014, you've got all these am I still on, Carlos?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Okay, sorry. I'm sorry, something buzzed in my ear here. I'm sorry. And then you've got Michelle Wee, Lexi Thompson. You've got all these other young ladies below them that are going to be fighting for a chance. So as we've documented and talked about, the LPGA is just, it's loaded, and it's going to be fun to talk about all year.
Yep. Hey, that will wrap up our very important guest, VIG of the week. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have the practice range, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic. We each take our shots at it. Fred, what do we have for our listeners this week?
Well, you know, Carlos, normally the Tournament of Champions that was held last week in Hawaii would signal the beginning of the PGA Tour schedule. But due to the third season of the wraparound schedule, last week's Hyundai Tournament of Champions was the eighth event of the 2015-2016 PGA Tour season. And the tour schedule is already 20% complete. We're a fifth of the way through the season. An article from Jonathan Coachman on ESPN makes the argument that the wraparound schedule will create burnout and resentment among tour pros and will lead to a decline in the overall play on tour. The question for discussion tonight is, do we agree or disagree with the fact that the wraparound schedule is bad for players and golf fans alike? And Carlos, I'm going to kind of flip it back to you and let you take the first shot at this.
Well, I have to agree that it doesn't help. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. I think it should be banned. It's so stupid. It's one of the worst things that ever happened to golf. And I have my point. And, when the tour transitioned to this wraparound schedule, I remember that the narrative when the other sports had similar dance cards that spent calendars. I have no problem with the tour giving, going starting in September if they want and finishing in maybe June or July. But give the players some time off. You know, this move also has allowed Circuit to fold the fall series. There was a collection of post-tour championship tournaments that had largely become an afterthought into the schedule proper. But, statistically, yeah, it has helped the fall fields. Fall fields events right now are played on the fall. They have benefited from that increasing competitive strength because since its inception of that wraparound season, according to the official World Golf Rankings, those numbers are increasing. Now, whether it's that eternal optimism of the Major League Baseball spring training of the surreal spectacle that has become the NFL scouting combine, unfortunately, there's no time to reflect in recharging golf. We're going to talk. We already said that Rory McIlroy had the eye surgery. He took some time off because he knew there was nothing important during this time. Henrik Stenson, which we'll talk a little bit later, he had some surgery too because he knows there was nothing to play for in this season. I mean, even in the third year of doing so, it's still weird that a new season starts just two weeks after the Tour Championship. It never seems to end. Where other sports leave fans wanting for more because they have an off season. Every single sport, the only one that doesn't have it, is the PGA Tour. Okay, the Tour has gone with just more. I mean, what? In 2 weeks I have another season? Man, give me some time. You will never compete with football. Nowhere. There's no way that you're going to compete. I mean, the Tour Championship in its former state was filled with players who had the most consistent seasons. Now, under this current points, the player just might barely squeak on the top 125 to qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then make huge jumps with two or three hot results at the time. It's not about the most consistent player during the whole season. It's just about who's getting hot at the end of the season. Just give them some free time. I truly don't believe it helps the younger players at all. It helps them because the top players are not playing. Some play rarely because they have to play one of the WGC the ones that are in the off season. I mean, in the fall season. But hey, you see how many of the top players in the top 10 play only once? They don't play twice. They play because I have to keep myself in shape. I mean, it's such a stupidity. Give them some free time. It really, I really go with what Jonathan Coachman says. It really, at the end of in the long run, it's just going to hurt. It doesn't matter that the players are younger, they're going to the gym, getting fitter and all that. You still have to play good. It doesn't matter. You can be fit and all that. Look at Gary Woodland, such a physical specimen. Where is he ranked at? Where has that helped him? Nowhere. I mean, you can be physically fit, but if you're not a good player, hey, at the end of the day, it's not going to help you. So I really hate it with a passion. It's stupid. Give the players some free time and also us as fans.
So let me recap this. I'm not sure I quite understand. You don't think the wraparound season for PGA Tour is a very good idea?
Well, let me say this. It's not about being wraparound. It's just that they need to give some time off. And right now, what they had before was some fall series that the top players never played. And, well, they took it as a time off. You know, but right now, they have to play all year round. And I don't mind, you know, if it's wrap around like it's the name, you know, it starts on September and ends in September because that's the way it is. But, you know, give them some time and give – I know that you have to play for the tour sponsors and all that, but, hey, there has to be some other ways, and there are many other ways, to help the young players and the veterans as well to get that time off. I really think they should have some time.
You know, I guess the wraparound is kind of growing on me, Carlos. You know, I was kind of against it also. But after this year – I do recognize that the longer season has made it more necessary than ever before that the top golfers are in excellent physical condition. But the stretch from the U.S. Open in June through the FedEx Cup in September, that's the toughest stretch of play for the pros. I mean, it's just big tournament after big tournament, week after week. The travel, I mean, that is a tremendous stretch of golf from the U.S. Open through the FedEx playoff, that 10-week stretch or whatever that is. The play in the wraparound has been interesting, and it has given younger players, lesser-named players, a chance to earn valuable FedEx Cup points and cash some big checks. In a way, this almost assures a younger crop of pro golfers are constantly moving up the ladder. The longer schedule does reward the younger, more athletically fit players. This, along with the workout regimens of the best golfers of the day, Spieth, McIlroy, Fowler, Dustin Johnson, they all spend a lot of time in the gym. Younger golfers, junior golfers, see that. And now they understand the importance of physical fitness and are hitting the gym themselves to gain strength and endurance. So that's a good thing. The fact that the more established players only really play in one or two of the events anyway, well, you know what? They used to play in a few events in the off season. They would go play for a big appearance fee someplace after the playoffs, after the Ryder Cup or after the President's Cup. They would go travel around the world and pick up $1 million here or $500,000 there for an appearance fee. So, and they don't have to play that much in these things anyhow. They come out once in a while maybe to pick up a few FedEx Cup points or a few bucks for to put in the Christmas fund or something. But, you know, the bottom line for me, Carlos, is that these established players really only have to play in one or two of these seven wraparound events. That allows these younger, lesser-known players to get valuable playing time and earn some FedEx Cup points. It gives the PGA Tour a product that television needs to fill airtime during football season, and it keeps golf in the headlines at least one or two days a week in the fall. I have to admit it, I have come over to the dark side. I do see the advantage, and I feel these advantages outweigh the disadvantages for the wraparound schedule, Carlos.
No.
I'm not going to convince you, am I?
No, I really don't see. I see the point that it helps the younger players to earn some more points, or maybe they're not high-ranked players. Yeah, but there's other ways that you can do that. You just don't have to play all year round. It's good for them, but it's really, I don't see it helping anywhere. Attract more fans or more players, really, to play the game. It doesn't, because we are watching football. There is no way you're going to compete in the TV to get people to watch a round of golf when you have football there. I mean, give them something to look forward to. Even the players don't like it. Maybe the younger players are liking it because, hey, I have somewhere to play and somewhere to win some money, but it's really not helping golf. I don't see it growing because of that. It's growing because of other things, because Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, they're winning the big tournaments. But I don't see them playing in the wrap in the fall series, so in the fall season, so they should just give that away. They should just give it away.
No, no, it'll grow on you. It'll grow on you, Carlos. It'll grow on you.
I don't know. I don't think so. I hate it with a passion. But anyway, that wraps up our practice range. Hope you like it. One with the cons, one with the pros. So now, before we go, we have some final putts for you, and I'm going to start talking about them. And, hey, Henrik Stenson, which I mentioned, he had some surgery early in December in Orlando to repair an ailing meniscus. He had that surgery planned for weeks before, and he continued to finish out the rest of last year's calendar. Within the previous month, he posted two top three finishes, tying for third at the BMW Masters, and finishing runner-up last week in South Africa at the Nedbank Golf Challenge. Stenson posted a message with a funny selfie from the hospital on Twitter. He's not expected to miss any significant time and will likely start the season as usual during the European Tour's middle swing. And finally, hey, Bubba Watson, he has listed his lakefront home in Whitmere, Florida for sale at $5.6 million. That was a house that he bought, formerly owned by Tiger Woods, in 2013 for an undisclosed sum and a commission, a complete remodeling for of the more than a half-acre property during his ownership. So, Fred, if you're in the market for a nice two-story home in Orlando that has been owned by Tiger Woods and Bubba Watson, here's the one for you.
Man, I would love to move to Florida, Carlos, for this time of year. I'm all about that. Hey, we do have some sad news to report. Christy O'Connor Jr., who was a nephew of the famous Irish professional Christy O'Connor Sr., died last week at the age of 67. He was an outstanding player on the European Tour, known for his convivial personality and considerable talent on the golf course. He won four European Tour events plus two Champions Tour and two European Senior Tour titles. He will forever be remembered for his win over Fred Couples in the 1989 Ryder Cup at the Belfry. He struck a stunning two-iron shot to the last hole at the Belfry across the water, which left him just 4 feet from the hole to garner the win to secure a tie with the American team and retain the cup for Europe. Did you catch golf's newest fashion trend in Hawaii, Carlos? Ricky's high tops and joggers. When asked about his newest fashion trend, Ricky was quoted, "I think the younger side is more positive. I think on the traditional side, they are not too pumped. I think Ricky is right." I think that may qualify as the understatement of the year. I am not seeing too many Augusta National members or USGA officials wearing either of these with their green jackets or blue blazers, not even Condi Rice. Carlos, little news coming out of the Asian Tour. They were in negotiations to merge with the European Tour. All of a sudden, we reported last week that the president of the Asian Tour quit and left. The European Tour merger is now questionable. Evidently, many of the Asian Tour players got together and realized a merger with the European Tour would not be in their best interest. It would not be profitable for them. They nixed the proposed merger. There is a tremendous amount of new young talent coming out of Asia, and they felt they might have been throwing away their future in a merger. LaJuan Mayer breaks it all down in this week's issue of Global Golf Post. A really good article in there. And before we get away from that, Ron Green had a great article in this week's Global Golf Post about Mark Rolfing returning to broadcast booth this week after his battle with cancer, surgery, and that kind of thing that he did there last fall. So that's a really good read by Ron Green Jr., who we had on the show a couple times and we will have in the future. Last thing, Carlos, that I have is that the Latin American Amateur Golf is on ESPN Thursday through Sunday. Be 2 hours of live play each day. Starts at 2 p.m. on ESPN2 on Thursday and Friday. Also carried on through on Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, it's on at 11:30 a.m. On Saturday, it starts at noon. So 2 o'clock on Thursday and Friday on ESPN2, Saturday at noon, and Sunday at 11:30 for the Latin America Amateur Golf Championship, and that's going to be there at in the Dominican Republic at the Casa de Campos, Teeth of the Dog, a course that you like quite well, I know.
Love it and know it very well. Hey, Back Niner, that's wrap up. That wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jeff Shackelford. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, and also to tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the game, the great golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.